glad to have you here tonight for another lesson in this series entitled, Where There Is Work That All Can Do. And tonight we are going to talk especially about the work that parents can do. When you hold a little infant in your arms, there is work for you to do. It's always intriguing to me to think of what the prospects are for such a little one. When John the Baptist was born, the neighbors said, "What manner of child will this be?" And that's a question that I often ask as I see a little one born into the world. It can be either a Christian or a criminal. It can be either a Hitler or perhaps an Apostle Paul. And much of it really is determined by the kind of parents the child has and the faithfulness of the parents. It's not all that. Each child has free will and can make the decisions he wants to make in life. But to a great degree, he makes decisions that are influenced by the manner in which the parents have reared him. And so if there's any area in which we need wisdom, and if there is any area in which there is work for us to do as parents, it certainly is in this field. The Apostle Paul has given us instructions that I think are about as comprehensive as you'll find anywhere in just a few words. And you fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath, but bring them up in the training and admonition of the Lord. First, there is this negative. Do not provoke your children. And it's interesting to notice two parallel passages. This one says, do not provoke your children to wrath. And it certainly is possible for us to treat children in such a way that they will become what are sometimes referred to as angry young men and angry young women. And I see these on the streets almost every day. I see them on the television, especially in the news in recent weeks. Angry young people who are desiring to actually tear up things and destroy things, even to bring down government. On the other hand, another passage parallel says, provoke not your children, lest they become discouraged. This same provoking will produce wrath in one child and discouragement in another child. What we're talking about here is just abuse of any kind. And someone has pointed out that abuse can produce two different kinds of dogs. If you mistreat one dog, he'll become vicious and mean. You mistreat another dog, and it will become discouraged and spiritless. And any time you look at it straight, you'll tuck its tail and run around the corner of the house. Both of these are the result of abuse. And both such young people, angry and discouraged, may be the result of abuse that we may heap upon them when they are young and when they are in our care. We could talk a long time about that. In fact, sometime I'll preach an entire sermon on this particular point. But we're going to move on from this and just suggest that all we can say is that we must apply the golden rule. The same kinds of things that provoke us to anger or discouragement are the very same things that will provoke children to anger or to discouragement. And we just need to treat them as we really would want to be treated if we are to rear children who are to be what they ought to be. But there is this positive side of it. Bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord, as the New American Standard Version has it. Now, we want to look, first of all, at this matter of discipline. Other translations have a slightly different word. The King James Version has the word in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. I expect that's the way most of us have memorized it. In the New King James Version, it is in the training and instruction of the Lord. These both really mean much the same thing. The dictionary says that training is to direct the growth of a plant, usually by bending, pruning, and tying. Farmers know that, particularly those with a good garden, know how to train beans or to train other plants so that they will go in the direction you want them to go. you sometime have to change the direction just a little bit, correct it, or you have to guide it in the way you want it to go. But this is involved certainly in training children. Unintelligent plants are trainable, but dumb animals are also able to be trained. I was once very much impressed and still amazed when my son and I went to the SeaWorld show down in the Miami area. And here were these huge whales that had been trained to do amazing things. Jump out of the water completely and touch their nose on a ball up there that was suspended in the air. And other things that those whales have been trained to do. And if you can train whales, then it certainly should be possible to train children. That's something different from instructing. You can't instruct a whale. You can't instruct a bean plant. You can train it. And it is something essential in the rearing of children that they be trained. Now, what is involved in training? Well, there are at least four things: example, guidance, correction, rewards, and punishment. Let's look at these one by one. First of all, there's a matter of example. Children learn so much by seeing and hearing. And at first, of course, what they see and what they hear is what their parents are doing, what their parents are saying. And parents must be absolutely certain that their own example is wholesome. What a pity it is for parents sometimes to punish children for saying words they've heard the parents say, or to see children do things that are objectionable just because they've seen their parents do such things. Parents are to give an example to their children, and a bad example on our part can be passed down from generation to generation. I'm reminded of Jeroboam, the first king of the northern kingdom of Israel, and every king thereafter was said to have followed in the path of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, who made Israel to sin. And we can be sinners and pass down our example from generation to generation to generation. I expect there are things that you still do, not necessarily sinful things, but things that you still do because your mother did them or because your daddy did them. You've been influenced by what you saw in those early days of your life. But parents must be careful to defend and protect their children from bad companions, because children learn not only from the example of their parents, but from the example of others with whom they come in contact. It may be other adults. And in these times, we're going to have to be very, very careful about allowing any adult that we do not know well to have any kind of time alone with our children. It's a sad state of affairs, but you're aware of the fact that it has developed that way. And then there are other children. Have you ever noticed when children, your children, associate with bad children, or language is bad on the part of their associates, that that's what they pick up? They'll pick up bad language real quick from a bad associate. So we need to be careful about the associations of our children, and sometimes even make certain that we go to take our children into places where there will be good companions for them to associate with. And then there's TV and Internet. This is also a source of examples that will influence our children. They become the companions of those they see on television. And many times we will allow them to be associated with characters on television whose language and whose conduct is of such nature that we would not permit our children to be associated with real persons who said such things and did such things. But you can just rest assured they're going to be influenced by what they see. Guards should be placed on television and on the Internet to see to it that children are not exposed to the wickedness of the world in which we now live. And parents must themselves make certain that the children have good companions. And it may sometimes mean that you have to invite children into your home, young people into your home, that will keep you awake at night, and you wish they'd go on to sleep. But if they're good young people, be thankful they're there. And if you yourself find your home a place where young people gather, and you can watch them and know what they're doing and what they're playing, the games they're playing and what they're saying, just be thankful. Thankful that they're in your home instead of being in somebody else's home where you can't make that kind of observation. But in addition, there's a matter of guidance. And sometimes that's physical force. There are just some things that you can control in a child when he's very small, against his will even, if you will. He cannot put his hand in the peas while you're having thanks. If you're holding on to his hand, if you're not, he may, but you can hold on to his hand and keep him from doing that. You can make him go to church every time you go. He has no choice in the matter. You see to it that he's there. There are so many things that you can control, and you have that responsibility to control that child just as long as that child is in your care. Communicate early with them. Begin talking to them. It's amazing what children can learn from conversation with parents as the parents guide them and train them, first of all, to respect authority. And I put that first because I think that's the most important thing that parents can train into their children. And it takes diligence. It takes training. It's very easy when they want to do something and you want them to do something and those things are different, and they begin to scream and yell and kick and because they don't want to do what you've told them to do. It's mighty easy to say, oh, well, do what you want to do. It's easier to do that sometimes than it is to stay there with them and get them to do what you have instructed them to do. But they have to learn at that early age that they cannot always do what they want to do. They have to recognize authority. And the parents are the ones who are going to have to instill that respect for authority in them. And if you want to know what the problem is in our society today, it's that so many people have never learned to respect authority in all of the days of their lives. They never have. I heard Brother Scott Smelcher tell about the conflict he had with his little boy one time, trying to get him to do something. And he was very patient. It wasn't a matter of anger or force, but he said, "You're going to do this." "No, I'm not." "Yes, you are." "No, I'm not." "Yes, you are." And for 30 minutes, he worked with him. If you pardon a little grandson story, I'll tell you one of mine. Well, it's a great-grandson, actually. His name is Will. I told one or two of you about this yesterday, I think. His name is Will. And there's a rule at their house that you have to eat something of everything that's on your plate. And if there's something on your plate you will not eat, then you don't get any dessert. You don't get any playtime, any Bible reading, anything at all. You go to bed without any more supper. Well, Will didn't want to eat whatever it was. I don't know if it was broccoli or what it was. Will wasn't going to touch it. And so he got no more supper. He was put to bed without any of the ceremony that he usually expected. Got up the next morning. There was that broccoli on his plate for breakfast. Will was not going to eat that broccoli. Absolutely not. But his mother said, "All right, no breakfast. If you won't eat that piece of broccoli, at least taste it." Well, he wasn't going to do it. Well, his grandmother up in Atlanta, of course, began to worry about that poor little Will. There he is, hungry, hadn't had any supper, hadn't had any breakfast. But finally, she got a text from my daughter that said, "My stubborn will at last has yielded." Well, I think that's an important lesson for young Will to learn, and any child to learn, that there are just times you have to submit to authority, whether you want to or not. And if a child doesn't learn that at home, he's going to have a hard time in school. Of course, these days, authority is not even exercised in school to the point of teaching children to obey rules. And some instances they just leave school rather than obeying the rules. And sometimes parents will stand behind them and support them in their violation of the rules of the school. And it's not surprising then that when they are under arrest for some kind of misdemeanor or something, they resist the law. And when you resist the law, it's no wonder you get shot. Now, there may be too much use of the guns by the police. I'm not going to get involved in that. But if you don't resist the law, you're probably not going to get shot. It's when you resist that you run the risk of terrible suffering. And you can just be pretty sure that those who are suffering that kind of thing have never really learned respect for authority. And if they don't learn respect for human authority, you can rest assured they're not going to have any respect for divine authority either. Well, I can't preach that long in each one of these, but it's an important lesson, and it's one of the most vital lessons that parents can teach. It's one of the most difficult lessons to teach. It takes more patience. It takes more determination. But as I believe it was Charles Wesley's mother said, or John Wesley's mother, you have to learn somehow to break their will without breaking their spirit. You still want them to have a spirit, but you have to teach them that you can't always do what you want to do. And sometimes you have to do some things that you don't want to do simply because there is authority that is to be respected. Children must be taught to behave at home and the church. Increasingly, I see children in church that have never, obviously, been taught to sit still and be quiet. That's not easy. It's a thing you have to teach them. And it takes patience. And sometimes the child that is the most problem as a little one, if you control it, teach it to be what he ought to be, becomes a fine person. But if you just let him do whatever he wants to do in church or in school or wherever, then he's not going to learn any kind of proper conduct in life. He needs to be taught to be kind and to be thoughtful and to be helpful. And sometimes parents need to involve their children in helping other people and seeing needs and even making sacrifices. And little children are more willing to do that many times than adults are. Let's give you part of your toys or part of your food to somebody else who doesn't have any. And teach them the joy of it, that it is indeed more blessed to give than it is to receive. And above all other things, they need to be taught to give God priority. We are so influenced by the world, and worldly ambitions for our children have so come to control us and to influence us that we sometimes let God just be second class or third class. Well, we bring them to church most of the time. Yes, but what's first? What's foremost in their life? They need to learn to give up some things for the Lord. They need to see their parents give up some things for the Lord. And when they see the parents doing it, then it's easier for them to do it because God comes first. And children must be trained to recognize that. And this means they must be corrected when they do wrong and commended when they do right. That's part of this training that they receive. Again, going back to the plant, that's what you do to train the plant. When it's going in the wrong direction, you turn it the other way. When it's going the right direction, you just let it go or give it a little bit of encouragement in the way it's going. I was amazed when those whales that we observed were being trained. And they told us how they were trained. On one hand, there was reward. If they did well what they were being trained to do, they were given a fish. Rather interesting to see a big old whale like that so excited about a little fish, but that was a reward for doing right. On the other hand, what would you do to a whale if it did wrong? You couldn't very well whip it. What could you do? And it was interesting to me that the trainer actually demonstrated what he did. If the whale did wrong, you turned it back to him. And he actually felt rebuked by that. Whether it's a whale or a dog or what it is, you have to train it. And one of the things that's necessary is to have in your mind a picture of what you want it to do. I never get a whale trained because I never would even imagine what a whale could do. I never did very well training dogs because I just didn't have a goal in mind of what I wanted that dog to be able to do. And I didn't have the patience to teach it to do what I could imagine. And if you don't have goals for the child, the child is not, somebody said, anything that's aimless has no aim. It's never going to reach anything because there's nothing in which it's aimed. We have to have in mind what a child needs to be. What kind of goal do we have for the child? When we hold it in our arms, what do we hope it will become? I remember getting a message some years ago to the effect that the quarterback for the Crimson Tide had been, for 2017, had just been born. That the goal that this grandfather had for this child that had been born to be there. Well, I'm not necessarily criticizing that any more than being on the team at Auburn. That, just forget about that. But how much better it would be if it said the next Timothy has been born. The next outstanding servant of God has been born. You have in mind where you want that bean shoot to go, that bean plant. You have in mind what you want the whale or the dog to do. And you need to have in mind what you want that child to be. First, foremost, and above all other things. And for a Christian, it's to have that child a Christian, not just baptized. The job hadn't been done when the child is baptized. But a faithful, God-fearing, dedicated Christian. And if we don't have that goal in mind, the world will see to it that that child is not a faithful, dedicated Christian. We can't leave the world to train our children. But there's another side of this. Well, I'm not finished with it, am I? Both punishment and rewards are essential in this line. Rewards only ruin a child. You just give a child everything he wants and you ruin him. He's had everything he wanted all through life and then he comes to a point when he doesn't have everything he wanted. In fact, I remember Adonijah, the son of David. And one of the things that's said about him, what is it, 2 Kings 1:6, I believe, it said that his father had never said to him, "Why have you done this?" He'd always done what he wanted to do. But he came to a point where he was not going to get what he wanted. And what happened? Well, eventually it cost him his life. That's what it was. We have to learn early that there are rewards and punishments. Punishment alone causes anger. There has to be love and punishment. There has to be reward and punishment as time goes on. The best rewards are often verbal. And I think we make a mistake if we think that physical punishment is the only thing. But physical punishment is, I believe, essential. And we're living in times when this is ridiculed. And many do not believe in physical, corporal punishment. But the Bible just plainly teaches otherwise. In Proverbs, the 13th chapter, in verse 24, the writer says, "He who spares his rod hates his son, but he who loves him disciplines him promptly." And then over in the 22nd chapter, and verse 15, "Foolishness is bound up in the heart of a child, but the rod of correction will drive it far from him." Now, when you think of a rod, don't think of a metal rod. You're not trying to bruise the child, but it's a little like Aaron's rod that budded, just a little branch of some kind that won't leave any bruises. May leave a little temporary stripe, but temporary by all means. In fact, I'm going to share with you something my mother told me when she heard me preaching along this line. And she said, "Son, you didn't know, but when I switched you," she always used a switch, when I switched you, she said, I put my hand down and switched my hand at the same time I did your leg, so I'd be sure not to overdo it. I didn't realize that was going on. I thought she overdid it, but she decided she didn't. I guess that's what she meant when she said, this hurts me as much as it does you. I don't know. But we're not talking about abusing children. And that can be done, and I wouldn't encourage it for any. Bruises should never be found on children. Whelps that remain should never be found on children. But a little pain is not out of order. In fact, it is needed. It is necessary. In the 23rd chapter and verse 13, do not withhold correction from your child. For if you beat him with a rod, he will not die. You shall beat him with a rod and deliver his soul from hell. And then one more, the 29th chapter and verse 15. The rod and rebuke give wisdom, but a child left to himself brings shame to his mother. And there have been a mother shamed these days because children have been left to themselves. But I want to stress that there are other forms of punishment that should be used as well as physical punishment. If you're just constantly switching or spanking a child, it loses its meaning. It gets to the point where it doesn't have any effect. There are other things that need to be used. There's communication, simply talking to children. I can remember my dad giving me talks that I think I'd have preferred to just get on with it and whip me and quit talking. But the talking can be very, very significant. Natural consequences. You go to the creek and you tell the child, now, we don't have much time, don't get in the creek. Of course, having been a parent, I know that's something you just will not say. But if you say, don't get in the creek, and the child gets in the creek and starts home and it's cold, well, that's just a natural consequence of disobedience. You just have to suffer. Just shake and shiver just a little while because you did what I told you not to do. There are some natural consequences, as well, logical consequences, as well as natural consequences. You tell the child, be careful and don't spill that milk. Well, if he spills it doing the best he can, don't punish him anyway. But if he spills it especially when you've told him to be careful and not do it, and he goes on and does something anyway, then he can just clean it up. Just let him clean it up. Don't do it yourself. Let him do it. It may take him forever to do it, and he may not be a very good job, but that's a logical consequence of disobedience. There's social rejection. You know, there's a close relationship between that and disfellowship. You say to a child, now, you're not behaving yourself as you should. You go off in your room until you can be as orderly as the rest of the family expects you to be. And the child goes off and so many times will come back thoroughly changed because of rejection, social rejection, and withholding privileges. All these things are punishments that are valuable, as well as whipping or spanking, as we might say. But they're necessary in order to train a child. But Ephesians, the 6th chapter and verse 4, requires more than that. He says not only discipline or train, but bring them up in the instruction of the Lord. Animals can be trained, but children are capable of more than that. Children can be instructed. You can't teach a whale. You certainly can't teach a bean plant. But you can teach, you can instruct children. They can be taught facts. They can be taught principles. At a very early age, they can begin to reason and draw conclusions. And it's amazing how quickly they can reason and outwit you if you're not very careful. They learn quicker in those early years than at any other time in their life. It's amazing what a child can learn in the first and second grade, or the first and second year even, of life. I'm amazed at some of the Bible teachers can teach the children. The books of the Bible and the apostles and the golden rule and such things. And they return more of what they learn in those early years. And parents are responsible for what the children learn. What are your children learning? Parents determine by default sometime just unlimited TV watching. What are the children learning in the way of language, values, and character? Well, they're learning some very bad lessons. But it's because you turned over the teaching to the TV or worldly babysitters or unsupervised. This is a little bit what we've talked about already. But then there is unconcern about what's being taught in the school. You know what your children being taught in the school? Now, we can't protect them from every bad thing that may be taught in school. But if you find out bad things are being taught, you need to be counteracting that. And you need to know what's being taught. I believe it's good for your parents to become involved in school activities so they will know what kind of teachers the children have and what kind of thing the children are being taught. Look at their textbooks. Look at their assignments. And defend them and protect them from bad teaching. And control those outside influences. But there's also the necessity for personal advice and personal teaching. We just must not let the world decide for us what they'll know, what they'll learn. Christians think in terms of eternity, and the world does not. Bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. If the Lord was in charge of your child, what would He be teaching that child? And to the very best of your ability, you teach that child what the Lord would teach that child. And what is the Lord teaches is, of course, contained in His Word. Scripture is profitable for instruction. Know the Scriptures well enough that when you tell a child that this is right, you can tell him why it's right. Or if you tell him it's wrong, you can tell him why it's wrong. I think my parents did a better job of that than maybe I have done. It's not enough to teach a child you shouldn't do that. Let him know why he should not do that. What passage of Scripture applies here, instructs you not to do it, or tells you what is right in contrast with what you're about to do? It's so important, and this is what makes Bible classes so important, but there's absolutely no substitute for parental instruction. You remember, I'm sure if you've heard anybody talk along this line, you remember what is found in Deuteronomy the 6th chapter, verses 6 through 8. These words which I command you these days shall be in your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your children. Talk of them when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, when you rise up. Be talking to your children about the Word of God. It thrills me. In fact, I think things may be a little better now than they were a few years ago along that line. Where I am more familiar with the congregation, a number of parents I know are having a little Bible reading with their children every night before they go to bed, teaching them these things that they need to know, and asking them about their Bible lessons at church, and seeing to it that they have their lessons prepared. That's what parents are supposed to do. We see that they get the lessons that are assigned them in public school. How much more should they get the lessons that are assigned to them in the Bible classes? We had a lady that came not too long ago and complained. The Bible teacher said, "You're asking too much of these children. They have to study all week, and then they come here and they ought to be able to relax a little bit." Why? They ought to be taught that if they have to relax during the week and make a B or a C or a D, let them apply themselves to the knowledge of the Word of God. She finally changed her tune, I think, and I'm thankful for it. She was amazed at what her children could learn and how happy they were learning it. We are too easy sometimes on children along these lines. And of course, Timothy was reared by a mother and a grandmother who taught him the Word of God. And that goes a long way toward explaining the kind of person that Timothy really was. Well, there's example, guidance, corrections, rewards, and punishment, which you can exercise for just a little while. You don't have a whole lifetime. There's just in fact, the day the child is born, your control of that child begins to diminish. It goes down, down, down. Till after a while, you just don't have any control. Whatever applied correction you've done, whatever examples you've given, whatever you've taught along these lines, that it remains. But your control of that child is ended. But the goal, the ideal is to instruct them in the teaching of the Lord so that as your control diminishes, the control of the Lord takes its place. And so they are what they are by the example of Christ and the guidance of the Lord and the rewards and the punishment which the Lord provides and the correction that they remember from what they've learned in the Scriptures. And so as you lose control, the Lord takes control, and the child consequently lives a controlled, disciplined life as long as he lives. That's God's plan. But if we don't start out doing our part, then it's going to be very difficult for God to take control of that child's life. It can be done. It can be done. We've seen some examples of it. But the manner in which you start that child off is going to have a tremendous influence on how God controls that child in his later life. And when that change takes place, when you have lost control and God takes control, is what we call the age of accountability. Before this, the child does what the parents teach him to do, what the parents control him to do. He is responsible to the parents. He wants to please his parents. He doesn't want to disobey his parents if he's being raised properly. But there comes a time when he recognizes the existence of God and the authority of God and the truth of God. And so he may actually violate some of the teaching of his parents because he sees now that God teaches him to do something. I've instructed my own children, you don't necessarily have to believe what I believe and do what I do, but I plead with you to believe what God tells you to do and what the Word of God teaches you to believe, even if it's different from what I have. I want to instill in them a respect for God. And when they become aware of God and aware of the fact that God would have them obedient to the gospel and God would have them pure in their lives and God would have them faithful and attendant, and they do what they do because of God and feel guilty, not because they think the parents disapprove, but because they're concerned about God's disapproval, it's when that point is reached that they are accountable to God. At what age? I don't know. With some, it may be quite young. With others, it's sometime later. But it's when young people become conscious of God to the point that they're willing to follow God even if they have to disobey their parents. They're responsible to God, they are loyal to God, and they obey God above all other things. If we have young people here at that age, we'd love to encourage you. If you realize what God is expecting of you and want more than anything else to please God, regardless whether you please parents or not, we'd be glad to assist you in obedience to the gospel, talk with you if you have questions. But above all things, let us make certain that God is in control of our life. We're going to stand and sing this song.